100% Canucks post-Olympic break. Landon Ferraro, John Shannon here. Okay, Landon, this is your last chance to talk about Olympics before we get back to talking about the Canucks. So where are you today on what happened, and what do we look forward to, or how do we manage through this?
Well, I'll start on on a personal note of it. So, you know, 2010 was the big moment, you know, the Crosby goal, and it was in Vancouver, and I was in Red Deer playing junior. 2014 comes around, and I'm off playing again and not in Canada. And so this was my first time being in Canada, NHL guys there, and I, for Christmas, planned a weekend getaway to Whistler for me and my wife. First time we're leaving the kid at home, and it was going to be a great weekend, but I got the schedule wrong, booked it on the wrong weekend, so I had to move it. Didn't think twice about it. Ends up being the Friday and Saturday night that leads into the gold medal game. So end up, luckily, she had friends there, so we have a great, you know, great time, but I tell her, I'm like, I've set my alarm for 4:40. I'm meeting them in the village, and we're going to go figure out a place to watch, thinking there'd be a couple places. It was packed everywhere at 5 in the morning. Wow. And I know the game didn't end the way that all of us Canadians wanted it, but for me, like, it was a real Canadian Olympic experience that I haven't got to have. It was so much fun. And but, you know, the game itself, you can dissect it all you want and say there should have been this change on the roster or this or that. They played an unbelievable game and missed a couple open nets, a couple really good chances on breakaways. Like, they had the game. They just didn't score.
Mm-hmm.
And it played really in games. Is that simple.
You have played in games like that where you have lots of chances and the puck just doesn't go in. You know, there is that column of puck luck. Everybody needs puck luck every once in a while, right?
Yeah, like, you have 10 of those games a year. Yeah. And it can happen in a gold medal game. It's terrible timing, but it happens. And, you know, I said this yesterday on radio, but at the same, like, I truly believe it. Like, again, as a Canadian, I wanted to see them score and for Canada to win. That would have been amazing. But for the growth of hockey in the States, like, there's going to be another big boom out of this. And that's only good for the game of hockey.
You hope. You hope. Yeah. You know, and you know, we've always thought that. You know, I was involved in 2002 in Salt Lake City thinking there would be growth there. I had less involvement in 2010, but I had some. And you hoped it would happen there. It didn't happen the way we wanted to, the growth that was. So let's see what happens. Let's see what happens if the game can attract new fans. Because that really is what this is all about. When we talk about growing the game, it's about new fans, new players. Will this inspire a ton of 7-year-olds to play the game in the United States? And so, because once you play the game, you're a fan.
It's a great game.
Right. And so, you know, and does it happen at the expense of our Canadian pride? Yeah, it does. It happens at our expense. But we have won much more than we've lost. And as somebody reminds me every once in a while when I get angry about a certain situation, they turn to me and say, you know what, John, it's just not your turn. And so, by the way, being in Whistler, you know, a host city of an Olympic Games for that. Well, that would have been magical up there.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, like, you couldn't get a cab, clearly. Couldn't get an Uber. It was very early in the morning. So I put the park on and walked it out and walked the 20 minutes. And honestly, like, the whole way there, there's people popping up out of the side streets and they've got jerseys on. They're walking to the village. It was like, I kind of had like a giddiness to me walking in. It was a lot of fun. And then you get there, it's 5 in the morning, and, you know, I'm there with 6 people. We ordered 6 coffees and a couple pitchers of beer, and your day starts pretty quick. And it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of Americans there too. So there was, you know, good USA and Canada chants going back and forth. It was a good environment. It was a ton of fun. And again, until the very last second, it was, I mean, it was stressful watching, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's good. That's what's supposed to happen, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is exactly what's supposed to happen. So we're sitting, we had a pretty big kind of booth area, and obviously all the guys showed up, but none of the girlfriends were getting up that early or wives. So we had a couple open area or a couple seats, and we see a couple 50, 60-year-old guys standing there and like, hey, do you want to sit down? And we can hear their accent right away. They're Aussies. I mean, it is Whistler. They're up there. Mm-hmm. And they're saying they're there for a family ski trip with both their families. And they're like, you know, there's a gold medal game, USA, Canada, and we're here in Canada. How do we not get up and watch it and experience this? And you could see they're asking questions the whole time. They had no idea what was going on. But like they had a blast. It was like, that's what it's for.
That, you know, in many ways, that is the Olympic movement.
Yeah.
You know, that is, you lived it in Beijing. I have been around it since 1988. There is supposed to be a camaraderie that is created. Rivalry, yes, and a camaraderie, but that's something to behold. So our guest today is Tom Wielander, who is, you know, one of the, I would suggest, one of the foundations of the future of the Vancouver Canucks. Would you do that?
I think that's pretty safe to say for sure. He's definitely elevated his game, and with what everyone has said.
It's kind of cool that he also was a teammate of Macklin Celebrini's and Jack Hughes's. So we're gonna have to get both sides of that. We have to get both sides of that story. You know, when you consider, you know, what he did at BU for those couple of years. So where, before we go too far, before Tom joins us, what do you expect out of the remainder of this season for Vancouver?
For Vancouver, you know, I'm really interested to see how, especially obviously the young guys come out of break. And, you know, I'm really excited to talk to Tom about this, because it was, you know, it was reported that he went back to Sweden. He wanted to work with his skills coach and his strength and conditioning coach, and obviously some family as well. But like, is he going to have a bit of a pop coming out of this break? It's such a weird season, especially for the rookies, that you're jumping into an NHL year for the first time. That's already a hard thing. Then it's condensed schedule. Then there's a big Olympic break. Like, there's so many different obstacles in it, but can you make that a positive? You had a couple weeks to really kind of reset yourself for the finish. So for the Canucks, it's the same for all of them. Can they find a way to have that purpose of getting better every day? And as hard as it is, like, not focusing on the results of, you know, the real win or loss column, but is our game getting better? Is, you know, am I as a player personally improving, using the extra time? Like, some of the best part of being on a team that is like this is having all the extra time when you do get a practice, mm-hmm. Getting out early, staying out late. If you're a little tired for the game, but you were working with the Sedins in the morning, it's going to be okay. Like, you're improving as a player. You're working at your craft. That's all right.
Well, we will see what Tom has to say. You know, the other aspect is, and we can touch on this after Tom leaves, because we don't want to put him in a spot, is that, you know, we're a week and a half to the deadline, and we're going to have to see whether we recognize this Vancouver Canuck team after the 6th of March. Tom Wielander with Landon and me on this edition of 100% Canucks.
I won't keep you long. Darren Millard with a tip for everyone who loves great hockey podcasts like this one. John Shannon and I host the OG of 100% Hockey, coming your way multiple times a week. The guest list is the best you will find. Multiple shows a week ensures you won't miss out on any news, and we dig even deeper into the biggest stories around the NHL. Most of our guests are also friends, so I promise there'll be more conversation beyond the X's and the O's. John really does get bored with that after a while. So join us for 100% Hockey. The name says it all. Subscribe now while you enjoy thinking about it. And enjoy.
It's the first edition of 100% Canucks post-Olympics, joined by Tom Vilander. So, Tom, we still have a couple days that we have to talk about it. I'm sure the guys in the room are talking about it. Did you watch much of the Olympic tournament? What'd you think?
Yeah. I mean, I tried to watch as much as possible, but especially like in the playoffs, obviously. I think it was a great tournament, a lot of fun, you know, a lot of talent there. So fun games to watch.
So I was telling Landon that, you know, you, back at BU, you look down the bench and you got Jack Hughes on one side. He had Macklin Celebrini on the other. So who were you? Were you picking sides or what were you? How were you enjoying the games?
I mean, not really. For me, it was obviously I would go in the direction of Sweden, but
that's all right. That's a fair answer.
Yeah, I wanted them to go all the way and win, but boys couldn't do it. But I had a ton of fun watching still, so it's good.
Like you watching that, you know, you've represented your country at the under-18s and World Juniors and World Championships last year. Like, is that something that you're looking at and it just kind of keeps popping in your head of that'd be pretty cool come 2030 or 34?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love playing for my country. I think every time I put that jersey on, I have a blast, you know, in every kind of way. You play for your country, but I think the games are very fun too. So, yeah, for sure.
I got to tell you, I think the Trey Corner is one of the great sweaters, the great hockey sweaters of all time. When you think about how cool and I mean, and not many people know it's a gift from the royal family to wear the Trey Kroner. It's a magical thing, and every time I see it, I go, wow. I think we have a cool logo and a sweater, but Trey Kroner is something special.
Did they go darker this year with the dark blue jerseys?
I'm not sure because when I've played U18s and World Juniors, the colors were very dark for the blue ones, which I like. I think
it looks like real.
But I had a couple guys telling me that, but I believe we have had like a similar color before too. So
Yeah, the blue did not pop this time around. When the guys are in the room, do you notice those kinds of things when you look at your sweaters?
With a blue jersey, 100%. You walk in and you're like, oh man, look at these jerseys, you know? that's like, you're just waiting to put that thing on for warm-ups.
It's such a weird, cool feeling, eh? Like walking into the dressing room for the first time again and just seeing that wall of jerseys hung up in the stalls and you know, as very, you know, it's very cool to walk in and see your NHL team there, but it is different when it's your country.
Yeah.
Other than watching hockey, what did you do during the break?
Sorry, you cut out a little bit. I didn't hear.
Saying other than watching hockey, what did you do during the break?
I was able to go home, which I thought was very nice, you know, see friends and family, see my dog again. And you know, while I was there, I was able to do some work too, which I thought was nice to kind of do in the off days, but kind of keep up. So no, it was a good time.
Ask a question, John. I know you're going to say, what type of dog?
No, I was going to wait. I was going to let you ask about how many. So were you on the ice every day while you were back home?
No, I took a few days off, but I'd say most of them.
Okay. What type of dog?
German Shepherd.
Nice. Big boy. You know, it's me and John were talking before you got on, and like it is such an interesting year to be a rookie in the NHL with the condensed schedule and then having an Olympic break. But for like looking at it, like to be able to have time to be able to kind of step away, especially for you getting to go home and see friends and family and reset a bit, like, are you looking to kind of use this as a springboard for the last 25 games?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I thought it was good to get like a bit of a reset, you know, both physically, you know, and mentally. But I think it puts you in a good space to really be try to be dialed in, you know, for the part that's left.
And what's your expectation of these last 20-25 games?
Well, I really want us to just go out there and have a lot of effort and work, you know, on the stuff in the game that needs to be worked on, both like as a team and, you know, whatever you feel like you're lacking in your game. I think that's important. It's very good experience. You know, every game counts. So, yeah.
You know, like the last 7 games before the Olympic break, you really seemed to be kind of taking a step and not only just the points, but you had 2 goals and 2 assists in those games and you were +4. Like your all around game seemed to kind of get a bit more confident. Could you feel that? And is that something, again, like when you're looking at the last stretch here, like to really kind of put that emphasis on that?
Yes. No, I actually thought that it felt like some piece of the game started kind of clicking a bit more before the break. So that did feel good. And I obviously want to keep having that and finding back to that. So, you know, in some ways, I was thinking that the break was a bit rough on the timing because I felt like a lot of parts of the game were starting to feel really good. Now you get that reset. But at the same time, you know, if I feel like if you can come back to that, I thought there was a lot of parts in the game that I started to really like.
Go ahead, Lennon. Go.
I was just going to say, like, was one of those pieces that kind of seemed to click, if you could put it to words, like, would it be your processing on the ice? Because it seemed like, especially when you're going back for pucks, like, you'd be able to make that shoulder check and make the read a little bit quicker that allowed you to make that play faster. And then, you know, just really let your skill kind of come out a bit more. Was that, am I kind of on the right track?
I think so, yeah. I thought, especially the last couple games before the break, like everything from the D zone seemed like it was a lot easier. I think me and Marcus Pettersson talked through a lot of the stuff, and I thought we were able to get like to the same page, kind of, and play accordingly. And I thought that felt very good. I thought we felt like confident in you know, the breakouts, retrievals, D zone. I thought it felt a lot better than earlier in the season, for sure.
How much of your game is carrying the puck?
Well, I think it's very important for a D man to be able to, you know, get down the retrievals and make good plays, because you know, depending a little bit on the game, there's a lot of pucks, you know, that gets dumped down, and a lot of retrievals to be made. And I think it's a very big part of the game to be able to make good breakouts. So I think it's very important.
How, like, you just brought up Marcus Pettersson and you know, you're talking with him, and, you know, as far as, you know, the year hasn't gone the way anyone has wanted it to. But looking at the guys that you do have on the back end as your veterans, you know, you had Hughes here for, you know, until a bit ago, but Myers and Hronek and Pettersson, like, how much have you been able to lean on those guys to really help kind of ease that? Because there is, it's almost a straight divide of veterans and rookies on the back end.
Yeah. No, I think they've been tremendous. I think, you know, obviously Marcus, I played a lot with him, so I talked, you know, a lot to him. And he's helped me out, you know, with how to deal with different situations in the game. made it a lot easier, I think. Tyler Myers, too, has been very good, very talkative, very, you know, open to help. And I think Phil as well. So I really think it helps to kind of have that experience on the back end when you're trying to get into the league like this.
Just curious, when you're on the ice with Marcus, do you speak English or Swedish?
That depends, honestly. So I'd say I mostly call out to him in Swedish.
But then if you end up, but, I mean, then if you forget who you're playing with and you're talking to Ronick, then then the Czech guy can't understand.
Usually I feel like you're able to, or at least I'm able to change that accordingly, you know. But no, I feel like many times I find myself, you know, like calling in Swedish to the Swedes.
I do find it more natural. I always found it amazing how, like, sitting in a dressing room with, you know, a couple different nationalities in there, and how fast, like, you or, you know, you're playing with Czechs or Slovaks, whatever, they could be in an argument with you in English, and then in the middle of that, yelling in a different language, whether it was happy or mad, whatever. But you guys just, I don't speak another language. English is hard enough for me. So I just always found that of so amusing, though. You could be in like three different arguments at one in the room.
It is, yeah. No, it's fun. I think it's good to have, you know, different nationalities, too. I think it's, okay, I think it's fun for the team.
Yeah. You made a decision as a young guy to go and play college hockey in the United States at BU. What went in that conversation with your family, and why did you do that rather than stay in Europe or go the junior route?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things that, factors in, or factored in for me. I think, well, one part of it is, my parents and in my family, education has always been, you know, very important. And, you know, for the most part, growing up, a lot more important than hockey. But then also, I think the place I was in Rogla was phenomenal. But at the same time, you know, in the pro league in Sweden, there's this kind of risk that you don't really, you know, get that support, like, from coach. And you don't, you kind of get stuck in this, like, limbo where you don't really get to play. And then you get sent to, like, other places. And I didn't want to run that risk because I knew going to college, you know, that wouldn't happen. So I felt like that was a bit of a more safe choice for me, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'd say mainly those two.
Just a couple of things on this, because I'm fascinated, because we in Canada don't really understand it very well, but there's nothing from a hockey event almost as good as the bean pot. The bean pot is something special, isn't it? I mean, you were in a couple.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I love the bean pot. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to play. You know, you kind of get into that, like, almost playoff bubble, like, in the middle of the season. But there is so much. I mean, like, the people of Boston love it. Like, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like in Boston, it's probably bigger to win the bean pot than the national championship, but, you know, so it's crazy. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun.
So the culture shock from Stockholm to Boston, which was bigger, Stockholm to Boston or Boston to Vancouver?
Oh, definitely Stockholm to Boston. I feel like in many ways, like, U.S. cities and Canadian cities, as well, like, as the people aren't that different, similar in many ways. But, you know, obviously, like, switching from, like, Europe to North America was way bigger.
Did you talk to anyone with your club team over there, Rogla, that had gone to college before, or guys from Sweden that had done that?
Not really, no. I feel like that was more of a conversation between me, family, agent and whatnot. So,
and when you're going through that process, because again, like it's, I guess it's just a bit different to me. Like here, you're playing junior and there's coaches that are there. Like, I mean, I coached a team, a junior A team here in town, and we'd have college coaches coming through all the time to talk to kids. But you're in Europe. How does, are you reaching out to teams to tell them you're interested in coming to school? How does that work?
Well, for me, it was a bit different. I wasn't really looking around at a lot of different schools. For me, I kind of went the route of, my agent was good friends with a recruiter at BU. And so that's kind of how we got in touch. And I feel like I pretty quickly, you know, got sold on the college experience. So,
and looking back, made the right move?
I think so, yeah, for sure. I thought college was amazing. I had a lot of fun. I thought the hockey was great. So, yeah.
I'm curious, from a culture perspective, what did you miss most from Sweden when you went to Boston? Other than, and you can't, it, I mean, I'm not looking, obviously you would miss your family, but was there a type of food? Was there, what part of the lifestyle was that you said, oh gosh, I liked it being at home more than I liked being here?
Well, I don't know. That's tough. I think, I thought Boston was great. I really liked Boston. I think that's a, you know, great city, a lot of fun. So I couldn't say I was unhappy, you know, going there. But you know, there's some subtle, cultural stuff that you're just used to, that feels a bit weird when it's, you know, not the same and it's, nothing like big in particular, but, I thought it was a smooth transition, so I didn't have any issues with it.
I found when I went to Germany, I hadn't spent much time in Europe, but you know, in Canada, and definitely I grew up in a smaller town. When you walk by people on the street, you kind of give them a head nod and a smile or say hi. And I was doing that in Berlin, and the looks I was getting, you know, so like, is that kind of what you're saying? Like, it's a little different. It's nothing big, but it's just, it's a little bit different. Just a little reminder. It's not home. But have you?
I think that's pretty.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty spot on. It's like, you know, and also like you're speaking like, I think a big one is that you're like not hearing your language anymore. You know, all of a sudden it's strictly like English, like everywhere. I think, yeah, it's just like subtle reminders, you know, reminding you you're not at home. I think that's pretty spot on.
Who was your childhood playing idol? Who did you want to be when you were 8 years old as a hockey player?
Oh, it's, I don't know. I think I really liked, when I was very young, I loved watching the Sedins play. Like they were, they were so good. I couldn't stop watching them. And then they played for, you know, Team Sweden too, and just couldn't get enough of them. But I think probably Stamkos for a while. Because back then I was still a forward. I watched a lot of his game. I liked Tampa Bay too when they were really good. They're still good. But, you know, when they had that crew. So, probably say some between those. Yeah.
What age did you switch to D again?
Man, I can't remember. Was it like 15 or 16 maybe?
Wow.
Yeah, like, cause I remember you'd saying that it was later than I was expecting the answer to be. Like, how did that come to be?
I don't know. I always, you know, I played for it. And I thought it was a good time. But, those like 2 years before I switched, I played both. So I played with the 04 team. So they were 1 year older than me. With them, I would play forward. And then the U18 team, which would be like 2 and 3 years older, they didn't have any demons. So then I'd play D up there. And I did that for a season. And I think it might have been like that season or the season after that that I just switched, you know. I felt like I've always been, decent at defending. I felt like that has been sort of natural for me. So I wouldn't say it was like a tough transition. So it felt, pretty natural. And I guess I was just tired of forechecking and backchecking.
I find it amusing, though, that like it seems almost backwards that you were playing forward with the team that was a year older than you. And then when you got to playing with even older guys.
Yeah. It was backwards.
Yeah. But you said it went pretty good. Like clearly you took to it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Like, did you enjoy it right away?
I can't remember. But I was just happy to play with an older team, I think. But, it was good enough, I guess, at it, that it worked for me at that level. And I just kind of stuck with it, I guess. But, I mean, I played like center, too, when I was younger. So it might have been from there that I developed some defensive habits that helped me. But, yeah.
When you guys were down a bunch of centermen this year, did you tell Foot that you played center, I can do it?
No, center was a while ago. That was a while ago now. Because before I made the switch forward to D, I played wing. So, but I still got a couple face-off variants deep in the pocket.
Yeah. Hey, what's practice been like the last 7 days while you wait for the season to start again?
Good. I think we brought a lot of intensity. I think we've gone hard and battled hard. So I think it's been good to kind of get back into it.
I saw you guys today were working on the power play and kind of getting that stuff going. Like, is it? I always found coming out of a break, and I, again, never was on one this long, but you kind of get your feet back under you. But then when it comes to special teams and you got to kind of really focus in, that's the last part of the game to kind of feel comfortable again. Was it nice to get that work back in?
I think so. Yeah. I think like any work you can do, like coming out of a break like this, when you haven't played for a while, and game situations in general, I think is very good. Just to kind of get a few reps and just to get the feel back.
Tom, thank you for the time. Appreciate you making us part of your day. Thanks. And good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Tom Villander. Landon, I'll be back after this on 100% Canucks.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
I'll tell you what, Landon, I gotta give you shit calling me out on my dog question. I mean, I can't believe it. You always got, if a guy talks about a dog, you gotta ask him about the dog.
I mean, you do, but I will, I think the right word is implore people to, if you're listening on audio, when you get home or wherever you have a minute, go and just click to that clip, because you'll see John's head just shoot up with excitement as soon as Tom said dog.
Everybody's got, there's got to be a good dog story, but then it's German Shepherd. So, yeah.
What, that doesn't do it for you?
No, German Shepherds don't do it for me. I don't know. I just have visions. I had a bad experience as a child with a German Shepherd, I guess. Oh, all right, so we talked about it in the opening. Just quickly before we go, how much different do you think this team will look in 10 days?
Honestly, I keep flip-flopping back and forth of – it's three guys and it's five or so, wow. You know, like, you know, they have said they don't want to trade everyone, and that's fair. There are, with the guys with term, it's not like any of them have like a year left. Like they all have significant amount of term. So, you know, those are ones where you generally see them at the draft in the summer when there's, you know, cap's not an issue. You have all the flexibility. You don't have pressure of a deadline coming and you're planning for the next season. So those deals are easier to go through. I think it really depends on, as we, you know, start seeing guys go on IR and thing coming back from the Olympics, you know, Jack Eichel goes on IR. Like we, as these pop up, that's really going to dictate how many of these Canucks get moved, I think. Just how much demand is there.
It is going to be interesting that way between and really how many trades will occur, you know, much earlier than Friday, March the 6th. By the way,
don't you think more are going to come early?
Well, I did. I mean, we saw earlier today Brett Kulak move. I thought that with the amount of time off that a lot of managers would be able to you know, work things out and even do more money shuffling, draft picks, more three-way trades, just because they had time without worrying about day-to-day life in the National Hockey League. I thought there might be more, and there still might be more this week to watch. By the way, were you proud that I didn't ask him what his fast food was? Were you proud of me of that? I didn't ask Tom.
Kind of, but now, as much as like I laugh at it, I do kind of want to know.
Yeah, that's right.
You've pulled me in, whether I wanted to or not. Now I kind of want to know. Well, I don't have to ask him at the rink tomorrow. I'll report back.
What I don't want to be when we do these shows is predictable. So the next time we have a player on and he talks about his dog, I'm not asking the question.
Oh, I'll call you out again. Don't worry.
All right. Thanks for this, Landon.
Have a good one.
We'll talk to you later in the week. Thanks for listening or watching this edition of 100% Canucks.